Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show that inspires baby boomer women to gain confidence around money so they can navigate life powerfully on their own. Here's your host, Lynn S. Evans, certified financial planner.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life not too long ago when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Number two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years, until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise, and it was something I could not only understand, but teach to other women. Too many times, I've heard stories from women who ought to know better but didn't, until they were forced to, because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to an ongoing informative conversation about financial topics women should be more knowledgeable about. My mission is to help women reduce their financial illiteracy and develop a healthy relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Tracy Bissett. Tracy is the Chief Financial Fitness Trainer of Bissett Financial Fitness, Inc. She educates and empowers individuals, notably young adults and entrepreneurs, to take control of and live their financial lives with confidence. As a former executive at TD Bank, one of Canada's Big Five banks, Tracy has worked with and in support of thousands of individuals and entrepreneurs to secure the financing they need. This hands-on experience, coupled with her formal financial education — she has a Master's of Business Administration and a Chartered Financial Analyst designation — it positions her uniquely to coach about all things money. Tracy's a full-time professor in the financial services faculty within the business school at Centennial College. She leads speaking engagements and is the executive producer and host of the Your Money podcast, all focused on increasing financial fitness. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you, Lynn. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I'm very fascinated for two reasons. Number one, because of the fact that you are also a podcaster, which is a good thing. You understand how we do this. But also, I'm just interested in the two different types of groups that you speak to, young people and entrepreneurs. How did you become interested in both of those different types of demographics?
Well, throughout my life, I've always believed that the younger you knew about money, the better off you were going to be in your life, because it has so much power in it. It affects all of your relationships, can affect your health. So while I was working as a banker, I was always volunteering in the youth space and sharing my knowledge that way. But corporately, when I was at TD Bank, I was working in the areas of commercial lending and risk management. So either directly working with those business owners to get access to the financing they needed, or approving the loans for companies in all different industries, all sizes, all across Canada. So when I left the bank, I wanted to put all of the things I like to do together, and really came up with Bissett Financial Fitness, so I could do all of those things that I like to do and I was passionate about.
And so have you done that then for how many years?
I started my business in 2016, so going on 4 years, which has been fun, and it certainly morphed from what it originally was, but it's lots of fun coaching both different audiences, and sometimes they merge together, which is really great.
Tracy, how do you present the information you have on financial education to young people? I'm sure it's different than it would be to adults. So what do you have, a course that you use? Do you have some program that's pre-approved, or do you do this privately? Or do you do it in high schools, in formal education? How do you get at them?
So certainly in Canada, financial education is not taught very well in school and high school, junior high. And I found over the years that everybody wants it, but nobody really wants to pay for it. So I focus a little bit older, kind of the 18 to 30-ish group. And the main way I deliver the content is through the podcast that you mentioned. And I am working on a 12-month money planner for that age group as well to really break down into basic terms. How do you go about making certain decisions with tips and templates to make it really simple? So it's to take the mystery out of money, and everyone doesn't need to make mistakes themselves. They can learn from other people's mistakes and make some different ones.
That, absolutely. I'll vouch for that one. We certainly don't need to have to live through it again if somebody else can give us some information because they've already done it. That's life's tuition that I think is fabulous. So then how is that different then? And I can see sometimes if you said that demographic 18 to 30 something, I can see how the two areas, the entrepreneurs and the young adults, I can see how that merges. But how do you take somebody who's got, let's put it in quotes, a great idea for a business and convince them that they need to apply this to some kind of financial background before they're really ready to become entrepreneurs?
Well, that's a great question, Lynn. And I think the starting place is always with a business plan. It's really important to validate the idea that you have, the target market that you think you're going to sell it to, how much you can actually charge, and do that validation up front before you actually start quitting a job, before you invest maybe your life savings, and before you commit a lot of time, because being an entrepreneur is hard work. So validate the idea. Sometimes the right outcome of the business plan is that this idea doesn't work. And then you've realized up front, hey, this isn't going to be the path I thought it was. Oftentimes you can pivot the target market that you're looking at, or you can pivot your actual product or service to make it work. But it's so invaluable to do that right up front. And I know most people like to just jump ahead and get going with the business, but you save yourself a lot of headache, a lot of money, and a lot of time by doing that work up front.
I would say I wish I met you about 30 years ago. Oh, man, did I walk into this with just stars in my eyes and absolutely no idea how to go about running a business, except that it was something I really wanted to do. And I think of all the, go back and think of all the mistakes that I made. They weren't mistakes, really, because I realized that from everything that didn't work or when I found myself really pushed into a corner, what I learned about myself and my own resilience and what not to do in the future became very evident. So my mistakes were truly my teachers. And mm-hmm. I'm not in any way suggesting that anyone with a great idea to be an entrepreneur should go that route. But I think when you look at things like that, you say the mistakes that you made, a lot of people get turned off by that fact of being an entrepreneur, that they're afraid they're going to make a fatal mistake. And I think it's knowing that there are other resources out there, people like you, who can help them walk through some of those most obvious types of mistakes that people make. It's really a good thing. I mean, I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it or shouldn't try it, but I think it would have to be devastating for someone who thinks they have a great idea and walk it through a business plan and do a focus group or some kind of test that would give you some validation of the fact that you're on the right path, and then come to the conclusion that this isn't going to work. Do you work with people like that to say maybe if you did this differently or you tried this, it might work? Or is it just forget about it, move on?
Well, it depends what unfolds, but it's a pivot that's needed. It's a different target client. It's a tweak to your product. Maybe it's showcasing more of the value of it. One of the things when I'm coaching with clients is that I typically coach entrepreneurs whose sales are anywhere from the low six figures to seven figures in revenue. And so they're not really checking out the pricing part. So they're not thinking about, am I making profit on everything I'm selling? And that's usually where the issue lies. So if you can't make enough money on what you're offering, is it because you're going after the wrong people? Do they not want to pay for this? Or can you add more to it or change it up a little bit? And so it's usually not, this is the end of the road, don't be an entrepreneur. It's how can we make this idea work coming at it from a little bit different angle?
And I think very often when I speak to people who coach business, potential business owners, when you watch Shark Tank, I'm sure you've seen it.
Oh, yes.
It just amazes me how different people are when they come in to present their information in front of the sharks. And there are people that walk in and they just fire the questions at them. How much did you sell? What's your profit? What's your cost? And these people just tick off these numbers like crazy. And I suppose it's much easier when you have a thing, a product to sell. But when you're looking at selling a service, like you and I have, how do you approach that and do some of the numbers when there really is not that often a template to use because there's not that many people who do it exactly the way you do it or want to do it?
For sure. And so one of the main costs that goes into that kind of business is actually the entrepreneur's time. So if you're going to deliver a coaching service, how much do you need to charge for that time? And it's not necessarily the per hour. You do need to get down to that. But based on your experience and the value that you're bringing, what would be reasonable? And so just like a product-based business, you're thinking about all of the costs that need to be paid because you are delivering that service or product. And then what are the other overhead pieces you've got in your business? Like if you're renting a space, you've got your utilities, your internet, all the marketing that goes into it, that's going to be factored in as well. So a little bit different nuance, but I think the concepts still hold and are the same. And usually one of the complaints I hear from entrepreneurs that I start working with is I can't get a consistent paycheck. And that typically comes down because they're not valuing their own time the way that they should. And so I encourage entrepreneurs to think about, what if you had to pay someone else to deliver this product or service? If they had to do that delivery work, how much would you have to pay them? And then don't be undercutting yourself because you're doing it and you're the owner and you can just spend all your time delivering. It doesn't really work that way.
No, it doesn't. And I can't tell you the number of times that I have given things away. My time, it really is what it is, my time. And because I feel sorry for people, you know, I mean, that doesn't work in a business, but that's the way it was. And I think that's the biggest lesson I learned was I have to put a dollar value on my time and honor it because I don't. And now I'm not in that position, but, you know, that was a hard lesson to learn up front. But somehow or other, the stars lined up and I guess I'm still here. Anyway.
Yeah. And really what that ties to is we form our views when we're young. We're 5, 6 years old. We've already developed views about money in our relationship with them. However, we're brought up in our families. And so that potential issue around self-worth or any baggage around money is always rearing its head when you're going to charge someone because will they think I'm charging too much? What are they going to say about me? What do they think? And so any issues you might have unresolved about money or things you probably didn't even realize, they're going to surface at that time when you try to state your value and charge.
Well said. I was just thinking when you said that the first time I ever, well, I'd started out in the insurance business. So my world was all about commissions. And when I decided I wanted to be a financial planner, and first of all, I think I was the first one in 100 miles to do that. But anyway, I had no idea. I had no idea whatsoever how to charge for this. And so the first time I said something to someone about that, I was going to do that. He said to me, well, how much are you going to charge me to do the financial plan? And it stuck in my throat. I want to tell you, it stuck in my throat. I said, $200. Oh, okay, that's fine. And then I went, damn, I should have made it.
I didn't charge enough.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just so hard for me to value my worth in that moment, because first of all, I had no precedent for it. There was mm-hmm. no one else who did it. So I really didn't know. But I threw it out there and it worked. And I just think of how much that stuck in my throat when I said it. But yeah, that is about my own self-worth and how I valued that, because I'd never been, I was someone who was the daughter of, granddaughter, I should say, three generations of a business. Mm-hmm. And the business was to sell fuel oil. Well, you know, that wasn't what I did. But the thing was, that was all based on sales and commissions for the sales of what you made. Nobody that I knew was a professional who charged hourly fees. So mm-hmm. I had no idea how to do this. But it's funny because it seemed to me that was the normal thing to do. And then the person that I asked that question, or who asked me, was a physician. So he charged with no question. He charged by the hour, you know, per visit, blah, blah, blah. And I guess that's why for him, it was so easy to say yes, because he related to that. Mm-hmm. But it was just not something that I was ever around. And I found it hard. And I watch other women entrepreneurs who get started in service businesses. And I look at them and I wonder how they come up with, how much do I charge? Because they've never been through any formal programs. That I know. But I think it's a great thing that you have that kind of training and that you're coached to help people with that before they jump into something. You have that podcast called Young Money Podcast.
Yes.
Why did you decide to do that?
Well, I knew that I wouldn't do necessarily a lot of one-on-one work with that age group, but I wanted to make sure that they had the benefit of insights from me, from my guests, and as well, they like to hear a lot from themselves. So colleagues or peers who are doing things, and wanted to make that available. And it showcases all the different routes to success and wealth. And sometimes it's entrepreneurship. I think we know we're not going to have 40-year careers at one company. So how do you get comfortable even in interviews? What are the questions you should be prepared to ask and be able to answer? How do you negotiate salaries? Anything that's tied to money really gets covered on the show, which is great. And to piggyback on your point you raised about the women that you observe, I can say certainly charging is a lot harder for women than it is for men. There's mm-hmm. just, it ties even more to worth, I think, and it's that yeah. stuff that gets stuck in your throat. And so really articulating the value is key. And there's never been a better time than now, because there is so much access to information online. So even if you're not taking yeah. a program, you can certainly scope out what other people are charging and at least try to validate what's in the ballpark. If you're offering more value, charge more. You're offering less, then maybe you do charge a little bit less, but at least there's an easier way right now to do that validation.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's much easier now. And you said something that made me think of another question about young entrepreneurs and helping them within corporations. How often do you find that you have young entrepreneurs who are employees of firms and say, I'm thinking about starting my own business, and how do you counsel them to start something while they're still an employee
Yeah, that's a good one. And certainly I encourage them to do it on a side hustle basis. So kind of on the side. I mean, they have to check kind of the legalities of it first. Are they infringing on anything that their employer does? But if not, when they're on their own time, they should be free to do that. And it's a good way to, number one, do that business plan, validate your idea, validate your client target that you have. But then it also allows you to see if you like that. Are you willing to do those late nights and those early mornings around your job while you're building up enough of a critical mass so that you can live off of this? Could it become a viable business? And some people who do that realize, you know, I don't want to work that much. Being an entrepreneur is hard work, and I like my steady 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are. I like the benefits that I have, and I'm not really comfortable taking that risk that if I don't make the sale, I'm not getting paid. So it's a good way to ease into it and grow that mass in the business. And if you are successful, then you can take that departure from your steady job. And some people just do keep it as a side business. We know lots of businesses out there, like multi-level marketing companies, where you can have a full-time job and do this on the side and have extra income that maybe funds your travel. Maybe it's education plans you have, maybe it's home ownership to help you do that, but you don't necessarily need to give up the steady salary job.
I think a lot of people find that a much easier way to become an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. But then again, in this day and age, literally right now, people who've lost their jobs because of the pandemic are finding that they need to become entrepreneurs in order to survive because their jobs have been taken away. They no longer exist. Are you seeing that now?
I am, especially where if you have a relatively online type of business or where you're doing coaching or service-based things that you can do and deliver online, you can do that with relatively limited investment at the beginning. And so I think entrepreneurship teaches you how to be very agile, how to be adaptable, how to kind of check in quickly, hey, this isn't working, I've got to make a tweak. And if you're very focused on the numbers and you're staying cost conscious, you can raise some money pretty quickly. By kind of capitalizing on a skill or knowledge that you have, which I think is wonderful. And if you've been in a job for a long time, sometimes it's hard to shift your mindset to do that. But certainly people are doing it with success right now.
Tracy, do you find that people are looking today to try to generate revenue by creating courses?
Yes, very much so.
Are you counseling them on that?
To some extent. I mean, I think you have to make sure it's something that's unique, that everyone isn't offering. You've got to be clear on what the outcome is going to be for your participants and mm-hmm. make sure that it is valuable and that they will have some measurable gains by going through your program. But I think certainly there are so many people who have skills to offer that they don't necessarily value in themselves till they start taking that hard look. And if you've amassed some experience in a certain area, why not share that with the world and make money by doing it at the same time?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think is most interesting at this particular time is that people have never really seen, I guess there's a guy who has written a lot of books about it, does a lot of coursework, Danny Inney, who said his latest book is What Is My Gift? Because many people do not see that they have something unique to offer the world. It just gets buried under their role as a fill-in-the-blank within a corporate environment. And they forget they can do these things. And it doesn't necessarily have to be what their job is. It could be a skill like, how to make a vegetable garden, whatever it is. It's mm-hmm. something that's not related to what they do, but they have these skills that others would probably really love to know about. And yeah, I've and seen a lot of people do that. They've jumped onto the course type thing as a way to generate income, and maybe it's their option to leave their job.
For sure, and it's really begins with taking that inventory of the skills and the abilities you have and which ones can you monetize. And I don't think that's been the commonplace thinking, like you said, over the years. And it's really more people are kind of coming to that. I think it starts with the younger generation, but anybody at any point in their career and their life should always be considering that, especially people with a lot of experience. You can certainly shape a lot of people's lives by putting it out there into the world.
Yeah, instead of one at a time, like you said in the beginning, mm-hmm. one at a time takes a long time. But if you do a course or do some things like that, you can impact thousands of people.
For sure.
I hope people will listen to that part of it and seriously think about doing some courses. Let me ask you a question about this from your website. You had something for entrepreneurs, and the question was, you know, you need to take your money seriously and you're in the right place. The first step is to review your numbers weekly. And you have something that's called, Can I Afford It? The Money Meeting Agenda. Tell us about that. What is that?
So oftentimes somebody starts a business because they're excellent at whatever their product or service happens to be, but they haven't necessarily had any training in their life on the financial aspects. In order for businesses to continue to stay in business and be successful, it's my belief and certainly my observation that having a dedicated time to review the numbers aspect of your business is a key success attribute. And so I encourage entrepreneurs to do it at minimum monthly, but certainly a small dedicated amount of time weekly is absolutely beneficial. It helps you stay on track, helps you to use those numbers to support your goals, because you typically have goals for your business, allows you that opportunity to ask questions to your bookkeeper or your accountant to make sure you're fully understanding your business. You're responsible for that and making sure that you hit your goals. So for anybody who's listening, if you wanted to head over to cashcoach.biz, you can download that money meeting agenda to get started. And the first meeting you have with yourself might be just looking at that agenda, just getting comfortable. And it's okay to take that first step because you're going to get more comfortable the more times you keep looking at your numbers. And as you do solicit the help, like Lynn mentioned earlier, you don't need to do this alone. There are a lot of people out there who can assist you on this journey.
Tell us that website again.
Cashcoach.biz.
Okay.
And you can download that money meeting agenda and get started.
Let's switch gears here, because I wanted to ask you about your experience as a child with money and how that shaped who you are. So let me ask the first question. What is your first memory around money?
I remember getting it as gifts, sometimes for birthday grading, we would get a little bit of money. But I learned very quickly that money was something I could use to get stuff I wanted. So I was probably 6 or 7 years old. I wanted to go to the store every day in the summer, the corner store. I wanted to buy like slushies or chips or candy. And my mom would give me money once a week, maybe a quarter, 50 cents. And then she would say, that's all the money we have this week for that. So it wasn't that we were short on money in our family, but we weren't going to spend any more on that. So I did what I thought every other little kid started. I went outside and with my friend, we brainstormed ways we could make money during the week. So we had a lemonade stand. We had little clubs, kids could come and we would charge them money. We created a little community newspaper. But I learned very quickly that we could get money if we wanted to. We just had to do something to get it. So I don't think I thought about it that eloquently at that time, but I certainly knew I could hustle and make some money and then I could get to that store maybe 3 days a week versus the one my mom was going to fund.
And then there you go. So that was your initial entrepreneurship. You figured out
yes.
that if you did something to create money, yes, that's it. I had a similar situation. I realized that where we lived, there was a main street right in front of the house. There were two lanes, but there was a traffic light right there. And I knew that every Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day weekend, there would be tons of cars because they all had to turn left at the light to go to the cemetery. So I would stand right there with my lemonade stand. I sold so many cups of lemonade, but that was just perfect. It was just a fun thing to do. And then once you got the money, what was it that you did with the money? When did you decide that maybe if I put some aside, I can get something bigger later?
Yeah, my parents were very good at teaching us. And I used to babysit a lot too once I was about 11, 12 years old. And I kind of graduated and wanted to buy books. So I liked books of a certain series, and I knew that they cost $2 and a quarter. So I would save up to get the book. And then my parents talked to me about, well, if you want something bigger, I remember a tennis racket very specifically. And they said, well, if you save up half, we'll give you the other half. And I think I had to save up like $20 for my half. And so they were instilling those lessons in my brother and I. And so that kind of graduated to, you want something bigger, okay, you save up. So even when I was going off to university for my first year of university, I had saved up half. I was going to go and live away at school. It was going to, I saved up $7,000, and it was going to cost $15,000 that year. So that just kind of stayed with me all that time, and really a credit to my parents for talking about those things with me and having those conversations in the house. But also I could see them, like my mom would be balancing the checkbook. We only got groceries every 2 weeks. She had a list. It wasn't like the way it is now where you're running out to the store every other day to pick stuff up. It was very controlled spending. And we had everything that we needed, but we weren't throwing money around, I wouldn't say.
Yeah. So what was your first job? Do you remember that?
Oh, babysitting. And then I went on to probably when I was 14, 15, I started looking after houses in my neighborhood business when people went on vacation. So I would look after their pets, their water, their plants, take in the mail. I even was subcontracting the lawn mowing out to my brother, who was a couple years younger. And then really went on to waitressing.
Subcontracting. I love it.
He was not a very good employee. We didn't have a great time with that. So I think we only got two lawns mowed because he didn't care that much about the money. Even though we grew up the same, he wasn't as motivated as I was about the money.
What would you say has been the most threatening to your financial security?
Probably different things. I mean, certainly when I was in corporate, if you would hear rumblings that there was going to be some layoffs or we were having a bad year, if our income was going to be reduced. And then in 2015, my job was eliminated. I was really fortunate. I was working a lot in the office, like 60, 80 hours a week, and I wasn't necessarily the happiest in my life. So probably hidden blessing. And I was fortunate to get a really generous severance, but it brings with it uncertainty. I hadn't automatically thought I would start a business at that time, but I knew that if I went back to another corporate role that was comparable, that there would be future restructuring another day and I'd be in the same boat. So I figured I would take control of my own future and figure something out with all of the things I like to do and that I knew people wanted and needed.
Nice that you had that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in the moment,
it didn't
feel like it necessarily.
No.
But it was part of a larger restructuring. And so I had the benefit of time with the severance so that I could actually think through what would be the best thing for me. And probably if I'd acted super fast, I would have gone back into a corporate role, but made the most of it. And I'm certainly very glad that I chose the entrepreneurship route at that point.
Sounds like you already had that in your blood from a long time ago. Yeah. Who would you say is the most influential woman in your life?
Oh, there's quite a few, but my grandmother on my dad's side, his mother, I wish she could have lived at a different time. She was just really inspirational in terms of making do with what she had, but she could make things seem magical, and she could make money stretch like nobody, because they didn't have very much money, but she could, you never knew that they didn't have very much money. And so she was resourceful in making clothes, different curtains. She'd find enough money to get some new paint to paint the walls, and just had a really creative imagination. So it would have been great to see if she lived at a different time, really, what she would have done with her life too in a different capacity.
Did she give you any advice that you can remember?
I remember she always found that I was quite outspoken, but she was very proud of me for all of the things that I was accomplishing and would encourage me. And so I remember when I had moved away from where I grew up, we would send audio cassettes back and forth and we would talk to each other because long distance was very expensive at that time. So like she found a way to always kind of stay in my life. always would send me funny jokes and little sayings. And she always read the paper cover to cover, and so intelligent and articulate. And if she had the opportunity to work outside of the home, I think it would have been phenomenal to see what she did.
Yeah. Yeah. She, of course, never had that option.
Mm-mm. Yeah, she did. She worked at cleaning people's houses to help supplement their family income, and but still had all of those household duties as well. So just a really amazing lady.
And I assume she's no longer with us.
Yes, she's passed 6-7 years now. So,
What would you say are some of the best and the worst financial decisions you've made?
So the best would have been starting my savings for retirement when I was 17, 18 years old.
Wow.
So that was my parents encouraging me again. And they allowed me to take some of the money I'd saved up for university to go into that. And they would, if I was short, they would help me fund that. And we were just putting $25 a month. But as you know, wow, the beauty of compound interest is very helpful. So
yeah.
So even though it's a small amount, that's probably the best thing. And probably worst thing, maybe waiting to buy a home. I wish I probably had bought a rental property earlier, but I didn't understand how good it could be. I don't have a rental property now. I do have my own home, but probably getting into real estate sooner. So not necessarily a mistake, but probably a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I would say more so that. Yeah, there are people I know who've made a big mistake by buying a house that was way too big for them with the belief that they would grow into it. Not really. No. So anyway, with thanks to you, Tracy Bissett, and just tell people how they can get in touch with you if they have additional questions.
Yeah, the best way to find me is on LinkedIn. So Tracy has an E and Bissett has two S's and two T's. And I would absolutely love to hear any questions or comments from anybody who's listening. And I am very responsive there. So please do reach out.
And listen to your podcast, which is?
Young Money with Tracy Bissett, the advice show for young millionaires in the making.
Oh, I love it. I didn't know about that tagline. I like that. Wonderful. So to all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast was helpful in enriching your understanding of important financial matters and how some knowledge of money can go a long way to easing the burdens of life. Thanks again, Tracy, for sharing your time and your knowledge. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to The Power of the Purse with Lynn S. Evans, a certified financial planner. Be sure to subscribe for more inspiring stories and information to help you take charge of your financial future. For more information, visit powerofthepursepodcast.com.